I am joined on the line from SIP2 by Adrian Keane. Adrian, good morning and welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Donny. How are you?
Now, we are going to chat this morning about 39 organisations who are going to commence industrial action over a reduction imposed on them, pay reduction, by the HSE. Now, firstly, on behalf of everybody here at NIER, and I am sure our listeners, can I thank those people for the work they have done since last February or March, because without them, I think our country would be in a far, far worse place. So I want to get that out of the way immediately. But what I want you to tell me, Adrian, is when you say 39 organisations, and I don't want you to list them out, obviously, because we'd be here until dinner time, but what grade, what type of people are we talking about on whom the HSE are going to impose these pay reductions?
Okay, what we're talking about are what are called Section 39 employments. And there's probably around 300 or so of those in the country. And they range from very large service providers like Enable Ireland, Irish Wheelchair Association, down to very small kind of services that would provide service for disabled people, for people with addiction, young people, all sorts of projects. But I suppose cutting to the kernel of the problem that we have, Donny, is that we did a deal back in the Workplace Relations Commission back in October 2019, which provided for restoration of pay for some of those larger providers. But there's 250 of the smaller ones that still haven't been resolved. And essentially what happened is that these people had been were essentially treated like public service workers when it came to cuts. So across that range of organisations, pay cuts somewhere between the region of 10 and 14% was their wages were reduced by. And there was a mechanism put back in place in the public service which provided for the restoration of that pay over the last number of years. But these people were left out of that. So on the one hand, when it suited the state, they treated them like public service workers when it came to cutting their pay. And then when it came to restoring their pay, they said, oh no, they're different. They'll have to wait in line. And our people literally, as I say, outside of those 50 larger organisations, the likes of Enable Ireland and IWA, who have had their pay restored, there's around 250 smaller organisations that still haven't had a penny restored. And as you say, those people have been very critical, particularly during this period, in keeping services going to people who are who need support from the state. In some respects, you could categorise them as being on the margins of society. So what we've decided to do, after much hesitation, because we have been trying to resolve this over a long number of years, so we're starting a rolling dispute in which we will have, the intention is to commence with a day stoppage in a number of different employments, beginning down in Cork and Kerry. In Co-Action is one company, South Dock is another, and we're planning day stoppages in December. And I mean, it's very reluctantly that we're doing this, but we haven't made much progress on it. And like these people are not well paid; they're amongst the poorest paid people who work in, you know, and as I say, whether they work, whether you categorise them as public servants or not, is a kind of moot point. But they're very poorly paid people who do a very important job, and they deserve to be looked after.
Well, we had a similar situation, I think, across the water as well, where, you know, people came out on a Thursday night and clapped and applauded the frontline workers and emergency service workers. But when it came to reflecting that gratitude in their pay packets, they were overlooked. And I think it was announced across the way there, across the water the other day, that there would be a pay cap actually on public service pay increases. So it seems that we're following suit in relation to that. But I mean, I think Adrian, my issue with this is that you were starting from a very low base anyway, if you don't mind me saying so, because these people, as you quite rightly alluded to, they were poorly paid before any of this came to into public prominence. So, I mean, not only are they getting their pay reduced, but, I mean, the pay has been reduced on already low pay, if you follow me.
Yeah, but I think that, that's a very fair and accurate comment that, you make as well, Donny. But there is this also, this issue in terms of the way that we provide public services in this country. And we have a huge number of organisations providing health and social services that are one foot, as I say, when it suits the state, they call them public servants. When it doesn't, they deny ownership of them, as it were. And I think we have to, at this stage, and I even noticed Danny McCoy from IBEC talking about that, you know, the size of our public service is very small in comparison to our European neighbours, or when you reference England across the way. So I think there is a bigger issue in terms of how we provide these services. And I suppose it's probably a legacy of where you would have had a lot of the religious community providing social services and being involved in provision of health and social services. That was not the norm, suppose, more so on the continent, etc. And with those organisations pulling back from that, I think, you know, it's timely that we look at how we provide these services, that they're done in a more coherent manner. Because we had the issue as well during the height of COVID with regard to the HSE having oversight over their organisations, and where we ran into more difficulty in the private nursing home section were services that were provided outside of that. So I think that that issue also needs to be looked at alongside this pay issue that we're directly involved in.
Yeah, but, you know, a lot of this, Adrian, comes back to a point that I have made time out of number. And I would do an average of probably 8 interviews a week here on Northside Today, sometimes 4, sometimes 8, depending. But I would speak to a broad spectrum of organisations throughout the country. And I mean, I've spoken on numerous occasions to SIPTU and organisations like your own, but also to NGOs. And I'm talking particularly, or thinking particularly, when I do interviews in surrounding the situation of homelessness. Now, I agree, I fully appreciate that it is not your bailiwick to discuss that, but it never ceases to amaze me when I'm talking to these people from a plethora of organisations, how much of what the government, I feel, should be doing, they are not doing. They're quite happy to farm it out to different organisations. And I mean, you're talking there about, you know, the likes of mental health issues, of all things like that, you know, people with special needs, etc., etc. I mean, to me, their care is the responsibility of the government, but it would appear that the government seem to be quite happy, when it suits, to farm this out to non-government organisations.
Yeah, and I think it's a major, major issue that doesn't seem to, like, I think what happens sometimes in this country is that we focus on the smaller issue and forget to analyse the structural things that are at play. And I think what you've had over a period of time is that the public service becoming more a procurer of services rather than a provider of services. And I think if there's one thing kind of coming out of this COVID, you would say that where you had a strong state that had good oversight, we did well. And where you didn't have that, and like I look at across the other ocean beside us out to America, and where you have a very incoherent government structure, you know, that it strikes me that it's kind of designed so it doesn't work in terms of at state and county level and federal level, and they don't seem to act in concert at all, you know. But coming back home, we have this difficulty in terms of a myriad of groups involved in issues. And as you say, what has developed is a kind of hands-off approach from the government. And I think, you know, we need to look at the amount of organisations that we have, you know, providing services and say, is this the most coherent way to address some of our issues? And as I say, if you look at how that evolved, I think to a large extent it evolved because we had traditionally a small state in this country. And we had a large religious community and a large charitable sort of approach to things, which I think we need to see, are we getting the best bang for our buck in that? And certainly, you know, the kind of people that we're representing are certainly very poorly paid, and they've been left behind where they see other people working in the public service who have had their pay restored, and these people are still waiting.
Yeah, it smacks to me, Adrian, and again, I'm only picking up on this morning, chatting to you. You know the nuts and bolts of it inside out. But it just, on a cursory look, to me, just seems downright unfair.
Well, you couldn't have said it any better, and it is. And as I say, we very reluctantly have taken upon ourselves to, again, up the ante in relation to this. And we would hope to, I'm based down in Cork now myself, Tony, but we intend to have some sort of protest outside of the minister's offices based here in the city, starting on Friday. Very slim down now because of the COVID, etc. You know, but we have to up the ante if we're going to resolve this for the people that we represent.
Yes, indeed, and I'll be discussing matters relating to Cork shortly with our head of sport, Fergus Carroll. And as a Cork man, it's not a conversation I'm looking forward to. to be honest with you, but however,
I'd hardly begrudge the tip, fellas, either.
No. And as a comment I made yesterday to somebody, as a proud Cork man, I would be embarrassed to see Cork fellas walking around with Munster medals if they won them on the back of that performance. But anyway, getting back to what we're talking about, let us get to the bones of this. Tomorrow morning, Pascal Donoghue says to you, or Michael McGrandy, whose offices are down there as well, come in, have a chat with us, and tell us how much money you want to put this to right. What are we talking about in pounds, shillings and pence, Adrian?
I think if you're looking at the 250 organisations, the last estimate that I saw for that, if you were to resolve it for a number of people that are involved, I think all told, it would be in the region of 17 million euro. From the whole scheme of things, it's not a huge sum of money, I'd have to say.
Well, considering as far as I know now, I'm not sure if you've seen this, but I think that there's 23 million euro on the way from Europe announced this morning, as the down payment is 25% of what is actually going to come our way, I think, for COVID-related issues. So, I mean, 17 million in the greater scheme of things is not a big sum of money.
No, and it would mean an awful lot to these people that we represent only.
Tell me this, Adrian, and I suppose for people listening this morning, this is going to be probably the question that they're all waiting for me to ask. How much of an impact could this have on the services they provide to the people who really do depend upon them?
Well, as I say, it is fairly limited industrial action, and it's commencing with Co-Action and South Dock down in Cork. After that, we're looking at some other services to bring out on a rolling basis, looking at DePaul, which will provide services primarily in Dublin. But we're doing it in terms of trying to limit what hardship we would bring on the people who rely on these services, and indeed on our own members as well. We're trying to build a campaign that we're not going away. So we're commencing in Cork this month. If we're not resolved, then it'll start in Dublin, probably it'll start in January and roll out across the country in looking at different service providers.
Well, all I can say, Adrian, is that I wish you luck, because the services that you have provided and continue to provide, there are a lot of people out there who are really, really dependent upon them. And, you know, when you divide out, I mean, 17 million, as I said, in the greater scheme of things, it doesn't sound like a lot. To some people listening this morning, that might sound an awful lot of money. But when you start dividing that out by organisations and then divide the organisations by the amount of people involved, when it gets down to the person on the ground, we're not talking big money in their pocket one way or the other.
Not at all, Tony.
Adrian, Adrian, before you go.
Yeah, no, I was going to say thanks very much for giving me the opportunity to explain as to what our campaign is about, Tony. Much appreciated.
It is indeed my pleasure, sir. And thank you and your members for what you have done and what you are continuing to do for us as a community in these, let us say, troubling and troubled times. Adrian, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for talking to me this morning.
Slán.
That's Adrian Kane there, SIPTU organiser. Now, I know a lot of you will say 17 million is an awful lot of money, but trust me, when you start dividing it out by the amount of people that are providing these services, as I said, when that's divided out, you are not talking about huge wads of money going into anybody's pocket.